All right. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Thursday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. Ian Scher will be here a little bit later. He's an executive editor at CNET. And one of the Facebook's been making a lot of news this week. They came out with an earnings report. They're hiring more people to look after violent videos and all of that. So we'll talk to Ian about that and a bunch of other stuff. Bill Geiger just around the corner as well. But we're going to start with Liam Stanton, who is the co-founder of a new company, just an upstart, a few months old, called Buoy.
That's right. Thanks, Steve. You got it right there.
So here's the story. So we, you know, I have the people from Chicago Inno on every Monday, and I grew up. I mean, I grew up hanging out at lakes, and I called it a buoy, and Karis Husted kept saying buoy, buoy, and then you guys started trolling me on Twitter,
and so you had the more European pronunciation. We're sticking with the American buoy.
Okay, that's what it is, yeah. Buoy. And so, well, tell me what Buoy is, because it seems to me like it's a company that's found its moment.
Yeah, well, we're trying. So we like to say we create workplaces that don't suck.
Right, right.
It's kind of a madness, right? Like, try not to suck, try not to have a workplace that
sucks. It's kind of the goal of most bosses, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
So we do that. We provide leaders an easy way to offer their teams meaningful perks and experiences.
So the idea is that there's more pressure now for the bosses to come up with sort of fun things to do or rejuvenating things for their coworkers to do, rather than expend their own talent on trying to find and organize those things. You guys step in, they kind of contract with you.
Right. They've got to run their business. These things take a lot of time. That, you know, you've got to dream them up, you've got to source them, and all those, you know, the logistics end of it. We come in there and take that off their plate.
It sounds like, I know there are companies around who've come up with kid classes, right? Are they right? Is it, you know what I'm talking about? No, so there's a company where you can buy a subscription with them, and they will place your kids in different little kids in different fun classes.
Right.
So they sort of find
we're a little
the
more
stuff.
Advanced than the
I know
little
that
kid
you are,
classes.
But there's a parallel there. It's going to take the rest of my life to figure it out. But so how's it going? I mean, are things going well for you?
It's going well. We're chugging along. But, you know, we think there's real value here now. When you're 22 years old, say you're a top accounting student, you're graduating in, you know, May, and you've got three offers from three different companies, and the first two you can't tell apart. You know, there's good salary, good benefits. And then the third one, they're doing volunteering, and they're doing mentorship programs, and they've got improv classes
right. And
chair massages. You're going to look at that company and say, I want to go there. That company stands out. But those things take a lot of time to dream up, and that's where we can come in and kind of take that off their plate.
Okay, and so someone my age hearing that might think, well, that's kind of crazy. But that
right. Truly
is what it's about, right? It's about experience now for millennials and workers younger than millennials.
It is, and it's about driving meaning with those experiences. We don't want this to be window dressing. We want there to be meaning behind the experience. So it's all about building relationships and trust across levels.
Well, now I was looking for a job. it was about salary and vacation and how long before I can get the 4 weeks vacation.
Right.
It's not the case as much anymore.
No, millennials are a little bit more socially conscious. They want to have more connection with their workplace. They want to make a difference. They want to have meaning. And we're going to have more and more of them coming in the workforce.
So why
right
do you
now.
Think that is, Liam? I mean,
you know, there's various reasons, but a lot of it had to do with parenting. They're parented a lot different, you know, brought up to expect certain things of institutions, right? And one of them is, you know, your workplace. What are you supposed to get out of it? Now they think, hey, this is a place where I can drive meaning. I can, you know, bond with other people, and I can make an impact.
I mean, I like it because I, you know, people I think make fun of millennials sometimes, those who don't understand or those who wish they were that age. But to me, I love that because it's a more sort of whole life approach to where you work. It's not just about the bottom line.
Right. Yep. If you can sort of incorporate those things where you're making a difference and you're driving meaning from your job, this is where we spend the majority of our lives. Let's get some more
right.
out of
and
it.
And so then you go to employers and explain this to them, or do most employers get it by the time you walk in the door?
Well, it depends. Some are doing it, but they're not doing it as well as they could or efficiently as they could, and we can kind of give them structure there. And some are kind of new to the idea. You've got some older industries in Chicago that are kind of just catching up to this, but most of them are on board.
All right. And so is this the sort of – how does it work? Do I contract with you for a year of fun times, or do I go a la carte, or how does the whole thing go together?
So you can choose these a la carte. We can come in and kind of risk-free. You can try us out with a couple different experiences and events, or we can come in and design a plan for you where we say, hey, Steve, you've got 22 to 35-year-olds here. We know these five things will be great for them, and they'll love it, and it'll create meaning and build relationships, and you can go that way.
All right, so what made you come up with this idea?
So my co-founder, Chris Dobbins, and I, you know, we've worked for startups, we've worked for big companies, and we've seen, you know, the kind of the through line is this importance on culture as it relates to getting the best people in the door. And we're seeing investment coming from our companies in the way of these perks and events.
Right.
but it's to varying levels of success, and it's always on one person's plate. And
there's
like,
kind of there's nothing sadder than someone who tries.
Yeah, right. They're right? trying. At least they're trying. Though. That's
like,
good.
Right.
And
they're sort of not a happy hour with no music.
Exactly.
Or anything like
exactly. So that, you know, it falls on one person's plate, and they have a bunch of stuff to do, and they're like, "I want to get done with this." So we're thinking to ourselves, "Hey, culture is getting important. Our companies aren't doing it as good as they could. If we create a service that ideates, dreams this stuff up, deals with all the logistics, the sourcing, the back-end analytics, that could be really valuable to them."
All right, so that's the product, and I like the idea of it. Now let's talk about the business of it. You're a few months into it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you where you thought you were going to be?
It's a great question. We're not millionaires yet.
But you probably didn't think you were going to be a millionaire.
No. We're coming along, and it's fun. Chicago's a great place to do this. We're a burgeoning startup tech hub, and there's plenty of companies that can use this. And even you see companies like Caterpillar coming back into the area, and all these companies flooding back in,
right,
placing that value on culture. So there's a need for us across the board.
And so where do you hope to be, aside from being a millionaire with a great office environment?
I don't want to be a millionaire.
No. But tell me about your plans. What's your growth, and what are your ideas?
So we hope to, you know, really hyper focus on Chicago right now, which is great because there's plenty of opportunity
right
here. At the end of the year, we'd like to move out to other cities potentially. You know, look at company or cities like Austin, Texas, or DC, or, you know, places where there's a lot of startups and a lot of need for this. That's where we see we could go.
Okay, so here's a weird question. How do you decide who to target? Because when you were talking about, you know, you brought up Caterpillar, and I thought of McDonald's in the new area there,
exactly,
or about Google, the area there. I mean, do you sort of go, I would imagine you don't choose by geography, but some of them must be geographically rich.
That's true. We tend to partner with high growth organizations because they're a little bit more progressive, forward thinking, and they can get on board with these ideas. They know this is important. This is not kind of throwaway. I like to say to people, if you don't invest in your employees, someone else will. So you'd better, you know, get on board with this. So a lot of it is high growth companies, but we can also partner with those older companies that are now realizing this is important to get the best people in the door.
How do people find you?
They go to buoynow.com.
And if I were to spell buoy, it would be?
B-U-O-Y, Steve.
Liam Stanton, the co-founder of buoy.com. Thanks for coming by. Nice to meet you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Jill Egan. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management in the studio. Bill is here to talk about our retirement planning. Our regular conversations with Bill Geiger are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Good to be here,
well,
sir.
You were here last week, right? So you should be welcoming me back. I think I missed you.
Welcome back to the studio, Steve.
So, you know, we come in, talk about the retirement planning and how to know when to do what. I'm 54 years old, and, you know, looking at tax time and stuff, I'm looking at where my investments, my savings are. It should probably be different for me now than it was when I was starting a family, say, at 30 years old.
Yeah, here's the thing. When you're 30 years old, you've got one thing on your mind with your portfolio, and that's growth. As a matter of fact, growth, and growth.
Right, right.
You'd be happy to double your portfolio next year or maybe even next month. But if you blow yourself up, you've got 30 years to make it back up again. When you're in your late 50s, your early 60s, you probably have more money than you've ever had in your life. Kind of makes sense.
Sure.
And at that stage, the last thing you want to do is to go backwards. The last thing you want to do is to have big losses. So your portfolio, your focus at this stage shouldn't be on growth. It should be on protected growth, not having big losses. And you really need to begin transitioning at least a part of your portfolio into creating the income that you're going to need in retirement.
Okay, so let me ask you this way. Do we look at this strictly by age? Or I would imagine if you could be of different ages, but different life situations as well. I mean, how do you know when to start to...
You kind of want to keep that focus on growth until you get into your late 50s.
Okay.
And the really interesting thing, some of the income strategies that we work with, they really work better the more time they're in place, the earlier you start. So that's why we say late 50s, early 60s. You really don't want to wait until you're 65 or 66 years old. You want to get a little early start in this so you can create a lot of income. And also, you don't want big losses 5 to 10 years from retirement. That can change your entire life.
And so the more growth, the more poised for growth you are, the later in your life, the more at risk you are, really, if things turn around and go south.
Oh, yeah. If you have a 30-year-old, and we see this a lot, we'll have folks come into our office and we'll do some pretty sophisticated analysis on their portfolio, some stress tests, and they've got a portfolio that they feel like or have been told is a conservative portfolio. And when we do a Morningstar stress test, for instance, we see that the next big downturn, they're going to lose 45 to 50% of their portfolio.
So it's not
imagine
so
that.
Right.
Imagine you're 60 and you lose half of everything you've saved for the last 40 years. So it's a critical time to really start getting serious.
Okay.
Late 50s.
All right. So I'm in my mid 50s.
Yes.
And we're talking about moving toward income in, what, 4 or 5 years from now,
yeah,
6 years from now?
You should start having the conversations. Matter of fact,
well,
you're
that's
invited.
What I was going to ask.
You're invited.
That's what I was going to ask. So if I know that in 5 years, 4 years, I should make this move, should I start thinking about it then, or should I start planning now for that? And if I'm planning now for that, what does that really mean? What would I do?
Well, the key ages are like when you get to 58, 59 years old. And I'll tell you why. Most people's biggest assets, a lot of people's biggest assets are their 401k plans. And you really can't get access to that money to treat it nicer, to lower the risk, to create income until you're 59 and a half.
Okay.
At 59 and a half, you can still be working, still be in your 401k plan, and move what's in there into an IRA and start doing some really serious, good retirement planning at that point.
So as far as me right now, there's no reason to start. Just know that that's coming up.
Yeah, your job right now is to save as much as possible. Try to keep your risk down. Save. At 59 and a half, you can start doing some different stuff.
So how often should I go back and sort of review? I imagine if you're 30, you set things, you can let them go for a while.
Yeah.
I'm getting closer, though.
You should be cognizant. You should be thinking that somewhere down the road I'm going to retire.
Right.
And
I do. I think that every day, Bill.
Yeah.
Every afternoon.
Just not
every
early.
Night. Sometimes
just don't
morning.
Retire
yeah,
early.
Right,
right,
right.
And you really should start focusing is not having any big losses at this point. Steve, let's do something special for your listeners today. For the first five listeners who call the 800 number that you're going to give, we're going to give away on a complimentary basis a full-blown retirement plan. And Steve, I'll sit down with them personally to put their plan together. What this will consist of is an analysis of where they are right now, but also a roadmap to get them prepared for a stress-free retirement.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Happy Thursday afternoon to everyone. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook. I've got a private page and a public page. The private page filled up, so check out the public page. It's all the same, and follow me there. Ian Scher is on a phone line. He is an executive editor at CNET and joins us from time to time. Ian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. So let's start with Apple, right? They announced their earnings this week, and so it's been all about sort of Apple and I guess Facebook too. But the sales of iPhones dropped, right, in the last month or the quarter, something like that. Doesn't happen very often, but it seems to me it's because everyone's already got one.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, you would think that, right? And that's kind of the response that a lot of us would have. But they sold 50 million iPhones out of 3 months. So everyone has one, quote unquote, is not really what it is. What's interesting, I think, is that it's 500,000 fewer than the same time last year. And so usually that's a really bad sign. The first time this happened last year, people were spooked because they thought, oh, is this the end of Apple's rise? What's interesting this time around is that the iPhone 7 Plus, the bigger one with the two cameras in it and all that stuff.
That's the one I have, Ian.
More popular than right, there you go, right? And I'll admit I have it too. And the it seems as though that Apple had not anticipated all of the demand for it and is still struggling to keep up, even though it's been out for like 6 months. So that was really interesting to watch. And, you know, it's really interesting. Apple has this very unique problem, right, where they work at a scale that almost no other consumer electronics company has to deal with. And so I remember during the Apple trial, with Samsung, they used to joke around that they couldn't figure out how many iPhones would be sold. And so they thought, okay, well, what if we just add up all of the iPhone sales ever, and that'll probably be what it is for the current year, and usually it would beat. So it's hard for them to really keep their heads wrapped around all of this.
All right, so I've got the new Apple iPhone 7, the Slalom or whatever it is, the giant one, and my phone bill comes every month, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I can get a new one when the new one comes out, but it's going to cost me more. And I'm really going to become the sucker, right? Because everyone's waiting for the 10th anniversary iPhone that comes out sometime this fall.
Well, that's the thing, right? I don't know. I mean, yes, if you're debating about whether or not to wait.
I should have waited.
Most people end up waiting. When you get into 6 months or so after the iPhone came out in September, people tend to start backing off. Again, 50 million iPhones sold. So not that many people back off. But people tend to back off a little bit in the summer months before the fall release of the new one. And you're right. This year especially is the 10th anniversary. Apple is expected to pull out all the stops. It's going to be interesting to see what they do.
So let's go to Facebook then, because a lot of news about Facebook as well. Mark Zuckerberg announced that they're going to hire, 3,000 extra people. I think that goes on to the 4,500 already, who will be looking out or monitoring for these videos of Facebook live videos of crime or violence or things like that. I'm kind of sympathetic to them. I don't know how many people there are billions of people who every month are on Facebook.
Yep.
I don't know how you could monitor it or avoid every instance.
You can't. I mean, that's the reality of it. The hard math is that, 7,500 people against 2 billion is no contest.
Right.
If that was a classroom, you would not go to that school. Right. And so that's part of the problem, is that they cannot police this network alone. They still rely upon us to do the policing for them. They do use computer technology to do stuff like root out, exploitation of children and revenge porn and all that other stuff. They found ways to be able to do that, but it's really on the edges. And when it comes to stuff like the violence we've been seeing, like the guy, I believe, in Malaysia who killed his child and himself on Facebook Live, we had the shootings last year. And it's just, those are things that are really hard for Facebook to police. Now, that said, they're one of the most profitable companies in the world. They're one of the largest companies in the world. And so it is incumbent upon them to make sure they do everything they can to police this network as best they can.
So when Facebook Live truly is live, right? I mean, a lot of what we do on the radio
truly live.
So, we have a 7-second or 14-second delay. I don't know what it is now. But Facebook isn't that. There is no delay?
Well, the thing is that you have a delay built in because there's someone watching, right? That's really what it comes to. And Facebook, even if it had a delay built in, and I don't know exactly how much of a delay there is, there's a natural one just because of the technology working.
Sure, right.
But the thing is that even if there was a delay, there still has to be someone watching it, right? There still has to be someone actually keeping their eyes on it. And usually when the bad stuff happens, we've already found out about it way later, right? Facebook, when the last really bad thing happened, it was more than an hour before they were alerted to what had been posted.
That's
part of the problem.
I just wonder if we're moving toward, and I don't necessarily want to go there, but I just wonder if we're moving toward a world where that's just going to be, that those things are going to be there, and it's going to be up to the audience maybe to, I don't know, to not look at it. I just don't see how you can expect Facebook to catch all of those things before I do.
I mean, the cynical side of me agrees with you. I think the other way to look at it is that when there was massive piracy on YouTube and there was music piracy going on and there were South Park episodes and all that stuff, and it was looking like a big legal problem for Google, they came up with this system that was able to actually identify all copyright infringement and shut it down automatically.
So wait, you're saying when cash was involved, they could do it?
Well, I'm just saying there are solutions that have been found to things that we never thought that they could solve. And so maybe there's an answer here. I don't know. But I'm not going to just assume that it's impossible to fix.
All right, tell me one other thing here. What was this phishing scandal or whatever it happened with Google Docs this week?
Yeah, so this went viral, right? Almost a ton of people got these emails in their inboxes, you may have as well, from some random person saying, hey, I sent you this Google Doc, open it. And what it does is it actually sends you to a website that then tries to trick you into giving them their your Google account. Right. And so Google, thankfully, was very fast to see that this was going on. They disabled access for those criminals to everyone who had accidentally handed out the accounts. And then the best part is that they went into all of our web browsers and they made sure that the web browsers knew that these people were bad people whenever you go to that site. And so they ended up solving a lot of the problem very quickly, but not before everyone got these emails in their inboxes.
Yeah, but it's not unusual, right? I mean, I've had those before where someone I know has said, you know, I'm sending you this, you need to open it. Why was this one so much different?
The part of it was how prolific it was. It just went out to a ton of people. I still don't even know how many, but
okay.
I mean, they are trying to get a sense of how large, A, and B, it was so convincing. A lot of these things are typically, you know, the images look bad or there's something wrong or there's bad English. This one was a near perfect copy for what Google's emails look like.
By the way,
that scared people.
By the way, I sent you a Google Doc this week. You didn't open it. Was that because you were worried about phishing?
It may be. I don't even remember getting it. So there you go.
I've said that too. Ian Schur, an executive editor at CNET. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much, Ori. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm talking off the air with Samantha Bookcamp, the writer for the business department, business section of the Chicago Tribune. And, well, thanks for my conversation with her. I'm going to go out and have a Big Mac this afternoon.
I made you hungry, did I already?
Welcome to you just gave me permission. You gave me caloric permission. Welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so you're here to talk about this. You wrote a piece in the Tribune earlier this week about there was a new regulation, and I guess it came out of Obamacare.
Right. So they've been trying to get something done as far as calorie counts are concerned ever since 2010.
So the idea is if I were to go into a chain restaurant, it's not every restaurant, right? It's not the hot dog stand on its own, but a chain restaurant or a supermarket where they're selling food to be eaten.
Right. Everybody,
I mean, right away.
Everybody that has more than 20 locations. So that's Jewel, Mariano's, Whole Foods, but it's also 7-Eleven, Walgreens, and McDonald's.
So they would have to post the calories on the items that they're selling.
Right next to them, yeah.
I love that idea. I'm all for that because even though I might not always have the greatest discipline to eat low-calorie food, I just want to know, you know? I mean, it's still going to be my decision. I just think it's good to know. And then the Trump administration stepped in. Sort of last minute, right? People were supposed to be putting up their signs today for the rule tomorrow.
Right.
And on Monday they said, well, no, don't bother?
Right. There was a last minute reprieve there was extensive petitioning and lobbying by pizza chains who said it wasn't fair because there was too many combinations.
Domino's hated the idea.
Exactly. Yeah. They formed their own lobbying group to say how much they hated it.
And
then convenience stores and grocery stores were arguing that we won't have local food. You know, our food offerings change. Think about a hot bar, you know, like a shrimp cocktail at the seafood counter. I mean, it includes everything that's in a single serving.
Yeah, and it would be very hard to keep track of, I guess.
Right. It's complicated for sure.
But, well, what a great business that would be to go into to become a calorie counter for restaurants.
A lab tester.
A lab tester. So what I know you had a sort of an estimate of what it would cost per restaurant, or this is per restaurant sign?
Right. It ranges so much depending on who you are and how, you know, a Portillo's with a hand-painted sign, for instance, is going to be far more expensive than a Naf Naf or a Freshie or a smaller chain that has a limited menu. But we're thinking anywhere between $500 and $2,000 per menu, and that just exponentially increases the cost when you're thinking about a McDonald's or a Subway with many stores, many thousands of stores.
And so the Trump administration put it off for a year. Is the idea that in a year it's going to kick in, or is this thing sort of doomed?
Well, the year, you never know.
Yeah.
It all depends on the regulatory environment at that time. And with the Trump administration, obviously, is going to still, have some, have a part in the game here. But at the same time, the year is meant to have a kind of discussion over the regulatory burden on those non-restaurant places where we get food, the gas stations, convenience stores, bakeries, and whatnot.
All right, so if I'm a CEO of a restaurant chain or a place that the 7-Eleven or whatever, and I was supposed to by tomorrow have my signs up, I wasn't told until Monday I don't. I'm thinking they're sitting on signs with the calories on them.
Right, right.
So what are they doing?
And that's the most interesting part of my reporting, I think, is that we found that everyone that I contacted after the delay said that they were going forward. We see chains like Sbarro and Krispy Kreme and even 7-Eleven and Jewel Osco going ahead because at this point they've spent the money and they know they're not going to get in trouble for doing it wrong for the next year.
Right.
So why don't we get out ahead of the competition and get a little benefit?
All right, so online, you guys, you did a little quiz of people, right?
We did a little quiz, a little 10 pairs of...
I was telling you off the air, you know, I don't know what... I want to know what calories are... And so what did you find out?
I made it very hard, so I apologize to your listeners in advance. But the biggest example is like a vegetarian sandwich at Jimmy John's has more calories than a Big Mac.
Say that again for me.
A vegetarian sandwich, sorry veggies, has more calories than a Big Mac.
So I could go, if my choice was, if I was going to go to Jimmy John's for lunch today, I could instead go to McDonald's and lose weight.
Right.
Okay, I like that idea.
So I like your rationale.
Thank you. So people can go online and sort of take that quiz.
Right, it's a fun little thing.
It is a fun little thing, but that's exactly what I'm talking about because I think we think we know, but we don't really know.
Exactly.
And there's just, I mean, whether you live by the calorie count or not, it's just good to have that information.
Yeah, who knows if it'll make a choice for you or not.
Samantha Bookcamp writes for the Chicago Tribune. You can read this story, take the quiz, at ChicagoTribune.com.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for coming by.
Pleasure.